Thanks for tuning into the podcast. Before we start the show, I want to let you know something. My latest novel, Personal Fable, is free for the next few days. So if you're hearing this ad, it's currently free if you're a Kindle user. So just look it up on your Kindle. If you don't have a Kindle, you can even get one of those for free by getting the free Kindle app on your phone. And then head over, get Personal Fable, have a read, and if you love it, leave a review. And I hope you love the story. Now, let's get on with the podcast. P.S. The promotion runs the 11th, 12th, and 13th of March. Welcome back, Hemming Brains. So the Hemming Brains list. Book 6, Chapter 3. The Old Oak Tree provides the final impetus behind Andre's throwing off the shackles of his depression. Do you think he would have eventually done so without the symbolism of life both Natasha and the oak tree provided? Good question. Andre is now free to idolize his wife as the memories of his reservations about her fade. Will he eventually place her on a pedestal, remembering only the good things? Will he minimize the issues he experienced in his previous marriage? Finally, at the end of the chapter, the prince even begins to show interest in his son again. Will he take a more active role as a father from now on? Good questions. Good discussion prompts, as always. Courtesy of user 7 of 9. Ripster 66 says, I loved that the old oak tree had come to life again in step with Andre's reawakening. It's a beautiful metaphor for renewal. I don't think Natasha and the old oak tree were necessary for Andre's reawakening, but the timing worked out such that his thoughts were primed by the old oak, and then Natasha's youthful vigour and his thoughts turned toward love and light. With time, the sharp edges of regret... this is in response to the second discussion prompt about Andre's kind of his memories of his wife becoming more idolised. With time, the sharp edges of regret are worn down, and Andre can look at his wife's portrait without discrimination for how he treated her. I hope he will carry forth the lessons he should have learned about what's important in a marriage, but that is yet to be seen. You would hope that he does grow from one marriage to the next. Brian E. Denton, War and Peace OG, this year, for whatever reason, I'm reading The Oak Tree different from how I have previously. Interesting, especially because Brian has read the book, I think, this is his 11th year in a row, according to his flair. So 11 times, he reads it one chapter per day, every day, for 11 years. Means there hasn't been a single day in the last 11 years where Brian hasn't been reading War and Peace. That is insane. And so when he says he's starting to see something from a new angle, I find that very interesting. So anyway, Brian says, this year, for whatever reason, I'm reading The Oak Tree differently from how I have previously. I see the springtime bloom of the oak leaves as mere momentary, temporary, and passing cover for the gnarled old scars of the oak tree. That old oak is still there. It's just covered for now anyway. There we go. Okay, so the more shallow metaphor of, you know, the oak stubbornly refusing to participate in life at the beginning of spring, and Andre seeing it and going, yeah, me too. And then, to his surprise, the oak said, hang on, nope, I'm here, and blossoms again, despite looking so old and gnarly. But Brian's saying, no, there's an even deeper metaphor of maybe Andre is feeling his life being renewed, but it's just a temporary coating over those old scars that remain. So many layers. That's what makes these characters great, I think. Tolstoy's characters do seem to have these pivotal moments, you could say. Moments of epiphany, often linked in with nature of some description. And they really do an about face and just change on a dime. It's quite, well, it can even be a little jarring, to be honest, and a little bit abrupt. But then I think maybe a book is made up of those key moments, especially a book which is an epic, where we follow Andre through, you know, many years of his life. You're not going to see the day to day. You got to just see the more pivotal moments. Could that be an explanation for why he seems to always be having these epiphanies at this stage of the book? Anyway, let's keep reading. Chapter 4 goes like this. Prince Andre arrived in Petersburg in August 1809. Excuse me. It was the time when the youthful Speransky was at the zenith of his fame, and his reforms were being pushed forward with the greatest energy. That same August, the emperor was thrown from his caliche, injured his leg, and remained 3 weeks at Peterhof, receiving Speransky every day and no one else. At that time, the two famous decrees were being prepared that so agitated society, abolishing court ranks and introducing examinations to qualify for the grades of collegiate assessor and state councillor. And not merely these, but a whole state constitution intended to change the existing order of government in Russia, legal, administrative, and financial, from the council of state down to the district tribunals. Now those vague liberal dreams with which the Emperor Alexander had ascended the throne and which he had tried to put into effect with the aid of his associates, Tsarovsky, Novosiltsev, Kochubey, and Stroganov, whom he himself in jest had called his Comité de Salut Public, were taking shape and being realized. Now all these men were replaced by Speransky on the civil side and Akhchiv on the military. Soon after his arrival, Prince Andrei, as a gentleman of the chamber, presented himself at court and at a levee. The emperor, though he met him twice, did not favour him with a single word. It had always seemed to Prince Andrei, before that, he was antipathetic to the emperor, and that the latter disliked his face and personality generally, and in the cold, repellent glance the emperor gave him, he now found further confirmation of this surmise. The courtiers explained the emperor's neglect of him by his majesty's displeasure at Bolkonski's not having served since 1805. I know myself that one cannot help one's sympathies and antipathies, thought Prince Andrei, so it will not do to present my proposal for the reform of the army regulations to the emperor personally, but the project will speak for itself. He mentioned what he had written to an old field marshal, a friend of his father's. Field Marshal made an appointment to see him, received him graciously, and promised to inform the Emperor. A few days later, Prince Andrei received notice that he was to go to see the Minister of War, Count Arakchiev. On the appointed day, Prince Andrei entered Count Arakchiev's waiting room at 9 in the morning. Excuse me while I sip my drink. Water, by the way, if you're curious. Very interesting. he did not know Arakchiev personally. He had never seen him, and all he had heard of him inspired him with but little respect for the man. He is Minister of War, a man trusted by the Emperor, and I need not concern myself about his personal qualities. He has been commissioned to consider my project, so he alone can get it adopted, thought Prince Andrei, as he waited among a number of important and unimportant people in Count Arakchiev's waiting room. During his service, chiefly as an adjutant, Prince Andrei had seen the anterooms of many important men, and the different types of such rooms were well known to him. Count Arakchiev's anteroom had quite a special character. The faces of the unimportant people awaiting their turn for an audience showed embarrassment and servility. The faces of those of higher rank expressed a common feeling of awkwardness, covered by a mask of unconcern and ridicule of themselves, their situation, and the person for whom they were waiting. Some walked thoughtfully up and down, others whispered and laughed. Prince Andrei heard the nickname Sila Arakchiev and the words Uncle will give it to us hot, in reference to Count Arakchiev. One general and important personage Evidently feeling offended at having to wait so long, sat crossing and uncrossing his legs and smiling contemptuously to himself. But the moment the door opened, one feeling alone appeared on all faces, that of fear. Prince Andrei, for the second time, asked the adjutant on duty to take in his name, but received an ironical look and was told that his turn would come in due course, after some others and had been shown in and out of the minister's room by the adjutant or on duty. An officer who struck Prince Andrei by his humiliated and frightened air was admitted at that terrible door. This officer's audience lasted a long time. Then suddenly the grating sound of a harsh voice was heard from the other side of the door, and the officer, with pale face and trembling lips, came out and passed through the waiting room, clutching his head. After this, Prince Andrei was conducted to the door, and the officer on duty said in a whisper, "To the right, at the window." Prince Andrei entered a plain, tidy room and saw, at the table, a man of 40 with a long waist, a long, closely cropped head, deep wrinkles, scowling brows, above dull, greenish-hazel eyes and an overhanging red nose. Arakchiv turned his head toward him without looking at him. "What is your petition?" asked Arakchiv. "I am not petitioning, Your Excellency," returned Prince Andrei quietly. Arakchiv's eyes turned toward him. "Sit down," said he. "Prince Bolkonski?" "I am not petitioning about anything. His Majesty the Emperor has deigned to send Your Excellency a project submitted by me." "You see, my dear sir, I have read your project," interrupted Arakchiv, uttering only the first words amiably and then, again without looking at Prince Andrei, relapsing gradually into a tone of grumbling contempt. "You are proposing new military laws. There are many laws, but no one to carry out the old ones. Nowadays everybody designs laws. It is easier writing than doing." "I came at His Majesty the Emperor's wish to learn from Your Excellency how you propose to deal with the memorandum I have presented," said Prince Andrei politely. "I have endorsed a resolution on your memorandum and sent it to the committee. I do not approve of it," said Arakchiv, rising and taking a paper from his writing table. "Here," and he handed it to Prince Andrei. Across the paper he scrawled in pencil, without capital letters, misspelled and without punctuation, unsoundly constructed because resembles an imitation of the French military code and from the articles of war needlessly deviating. "To what committee has the memorandum been referred?" inquired Prince Andrei. "To the Committee on Army Regulations, and I have recommended that Your Honour should be appointed a member, but without a salary." Prince Andrei smiled. "I don't want one." "A member without salary," repeated Arakchiv. "I have the honour. Call the next one. Who else is there?" he shouted, bowing to Prince Andrei. All right, there we go. A chapter for you. I didn't take much of that in, if I'm honest. Prince Andrei has tried to have a memorandum presented at court and is disappointed to find that it hasn't really been paid much attention to. Did I gather that right? Anyway, discuss it in the Reddit thread, and I will see you tomorrow.